Hello, this is Shambhavi. Welcome to Satsang. Satsang is an ancient spiritual practice from India. It means being in reality together. I give Satsang live every Wednesday and Sunday night in Portland, Maine. This Dharma talk was recorded during one of our Wednesday night gatherings. Please visit jayakula.org to learn more about the teachings. You can find video satsangs on Jayakula's YouTube channel, and my books are all available on Amazon.com. Much love to you, wherever and however you are. So the topic of today's Dharma talk is the three kinds of effort that we could engage in with relation to our sadhana, our spiritual practice. And Ma talked about all three of these kinds of effort. We experience all three of these kinds of effort together. Sometimes we're experiencing one and there's a little breakthrough of another kind. And then sometimes another breakthrough. Until it all becomes what is called effortless sadhana, spontaneous sadhana. So the first kind of effort that I want to talk about is the kind of effort where we're actually making a big effort and we feel that it's something difficult and that we don't want to do it. Ma said, by practice, by constant practice, anything howsoever difficult can be accomplished. We don't understand that by and large in our culture today. We don't understand how much effort it takes to be excellent. We don't understand the whole idea of apprenticing ourselves to a task that is difficult and takes a long time. We don't have, in general, the patience for going day by day in a small way. We don't, in general, have patience for what Ma called coming and going, the process of coming and going, where we're trying to do something that's difficult and the process is, you know, two steps forward, one step back. We don't have the patience for failure. We don't actually understand failure. We don't understand the necessity of failing and trying again. We don't understand the wisdom of failure. We don't actually understand how things work. We don't understand, especially the younger people, that things work by coming and going over a long period of time, not by just going quickly uphill for a short period of time. They also don't work by always finding the easiest way, nor do things always go as we want them to go. And this is something that, you know, really many students I have are quite perplexed about, why things take so long. Why do I have to put in so much effort? Isn't this supposed to be about effortless spontaneity? Why do I have to put in so much effort? Ma, who was the epitome of effortless spontaneity, was constantly telling people they had to put in sustained hard effort. By practice, by constant practice, anything howsoever difficult can be accomplished. If you want to accomplish anything in your life, not just waking up, anything, you have to put in sustained, considered, patient, humble effort. Where some days it's not going to be working for you, and some days it is, right? And you just have to learn to keep putting one foot in front of the other. Anything, if you want to be excellent at anything in life, you have to learn how to do this with actual humility and actual patience. And actually understanding that this is nature, this is how nature works. This is how we do things, how we become excellent at things. And by doing that, even the most difficult task can be accomplished. One door closes, you look for another door that's open. You don't just go, oh, what the hell, wasn't meant to be. Or that was too hard, no, can't. Or why is it falling apart? It was all supposed to be different. That's what Swami Gugulananda taught me. It's all supposed to happen in 0.031 seconds. Those who meditate, whether their minds are able to concentrate or not, continue their meditation. Whether you like to do japa or not, try to adhere to the practice of it. Make an effort to let your mind be filled with God's name at all times, be it at home or anywhere else. Remember that nothing exists outside of God. There should be continuous effort to remember that nothing exists outside of God or this reality, this awake, aware reality. There is nothing else. There is nothing else to achieve. Try to remember, make the effort to remember that at all times. Be it in the form of a servant or in the form of self, make an effort to attain to yourself. The effort is to attain to yourself, to find out who you really are. You are immortal. Then why suffer in birth and death? Be in yourself, Ma says. What does that instruction mean? Be in yourself. Find a way to rest in your real nature. Find yourself and stick to yourself like white on rice. Ooh, I get to say that. It's one of my favorite phrases. We get a glimpse of ourself, and then, you know, we go, oh, yeah, right. And then we just go off into Karmaville, Karma Carnival. And then we put in a little more effort later down there. Oh, yeah, now I remember. Oh, that felt really good. Okay, Karma Carnival again. Here I come. You have to make a sustained effort to find yourself and remain in yourself. Remain there. Whatever realization you have, however small, however big, remain there. Find a way to remain there. And this is the main effort that we're making, those of us who are not yet fully enlightened. Make efforts to be ever connected to God so that the effort transforms into habit. Now, the main reason we have to make so much effort is because we have habits. And habits are literally, not metaphorically, patterns of consciousness and energy that have momentum. And we have to counter that momentum with our effort and create new habits. New samskaras that lead us in the right direction of waking up. So in order to counter that momentum of your karmas and create new karmas that will eventually lead to karmalessness, you have to make sustained effort. Ma constantly taught, everyday effort at the same time if you can, right? Over a long period of time. You know, we're all in it for the long haul. So that first kind of effort is the effort that is hard effort because it's, you know, against our resistance. It's against all the comforts and pleasures and laziness and ease of just going along the way we always go, right? Like a truck on the highway going in the rutted grooves that it's, all the trucks have been going on. So much easier just to go that way. Some say by sustained effort, one may attain to enlightenment. But is it true that effort can bring about enlightenment? This is Ma talking. Is illumination dependent on action? Is waking up dependent on action? All right, the veil is destroyed, and when this has been accomplished, that which is stands revealed. So the effort that we're making, sorry for any New Agey friends that are listening or might listen in the future, the effort that we're making is not to transform consciousness. Consciousness is already perfect. It is unchanging. You can't do anything to it. I don't care how many crystals you throw at it. But you can relax the tensions of your karma. That's the veil. The veil is your limited habits of body, energy, and mind that create a state of ignorance in you of your real nature. You can relax those patterns of body, energy, and mind. You can relax your self-concept. You can let go of your conceptual way of relating to experience and enter into a state of total spontaneity. And then the enlightened condition that you've always been will reveal itself to you as it always has been and always will be. So the effort that we're putting in is to relax ourselves, to relax our patterns of karma, not to change consciousness or alter consciousness in some way. Ma says, what is known as the fruit of effort is nothing but the illumination. So the fruit of effort is that illumination of your real nature, who you really are. So in other places, Ma says that attachment, that's another way of talking about our karmas, our attachment to being in this particular form, living a certain form of life, our attachment to certain emotional patterns and so on, cannot be gotten rid of through sheer effort. That kind of effort that is only effort, effort you could say that's driven effortfully against our resistance in a kind of slogging fashion, cannot get rid of attachments, Ma says. We have to engage in that kind of effort to keep going. But ultimately, that's not the quality or kind of effort that's really going to erode our attachments. Ma says that the kind of effort, and this is the second kind of effort, that really dissolves our karmas is effort driven by desire or devotion. Same thing, just different ways of saying the same thing. The absolutely unstoppable desire to wake up. Not a desire to be a good practitioner, not a desire to impress anybody, not a desire to get approval, not a desire to have siddhis or special powers, not a desire to be a great guru, not a desire to be a great anything. The only desire that will dissolve karma is the desire to know yourself, the desire to wake up, that unstoppable divine desire. That's the desire, and your devotion, the feeling of devotion toward that, toward whatever glimpses you've had of your own enlightened self, a feeling of devotion toward that. These are what will melt and burn karma. This desire for understanding, for knowledge will burn it, and the devotion will melt it. This is the kind of language that Ma often uses. Attachment, Ma says, cannot be gotten rid of by conscious efforts. You're just consciously striving in a kind of mind-centered way. An increase in longing for God can alone expel all attachments. So sometimes we engage in this effort, as she says, you don't want to do japa, but you do japa. Japa is the repetition of mantras using a mala, some beads. You don't want to meditate, but you meditate anyway. You know, that's hard time. But then there's another kind of effort that's really driven by this natural desire or natural devotion. And that kind of effort is the effort that's really starting to get at this karma, really starting to burn it or melt it. And then Ma says, for the traveler on the path of Dharma, the direction should be toward the effortless revelation of one's own nature. So all of this effort, whether driven just by sheer determination, I mean, in the beginning, and you know, even effort driven by misguided aims is good. You're doing it. So, you know, some people have, you know, they want the teacher to love them. They want to prove they're the best. We have all kinds of, you know, realm-driven reasons for doing practice. And, so, you know, whatever gets you there. But eventually you have to find this other motivation, which is that you have a natural curiosity, and eventually that leads to a burning desire to know yourself, to get out of this prison of limitation. And then following that, devotion. Devotion is primary, more primary than this will to knowledge. So an increase in longing for this knowledge for your own self, that alone is what really burns and melts this karma. But we have to understand that our ultimate destination is not to be continually making these efforts and continually in a state of desperate longing, but that eventually we move into a state of surrender, or what Ma calls immersion. We become immersed in the self. This is called samavesha in Sanskrit. We become immersed in our same self. And when we have moments like that, because you can have moments like that even if you're not enlightened at all, that's what keeps us going, you know, occasional candy. We become immersed in our own nature, and when that happens, that state of surrender of anavamala, the feeling of separation, then the sense of effort disappears and we enter into effortless practice. Huma says, so long as you do not become absorbed in meditation and japa, it has to be performed by constant endeavor. But once you become absorbed in it, then it becomes effortless. So this ability, or really, you know, capacity, a spiritual capacity to become absorbed in your practice, to just let go of any and all considerations about what you want or how you look or what anyone thinks of you or who you are or what anything, and you're just absorbed in it. That's when this effortlessness can arise. You have to. This is has to do with that idea of losing the watcher. You have to lose the watcher when you're doing practice. If the watcher is still there, you're not absorbed in it. It doesn't mean you're unaware. You are being awareness, but that's different than being the watcher. So then Ma talks a little about the relationship of this sustained effort to freeing yourself from doubt. Ma says this about doubt. It is natural that doubts should arise for those who are on the path leading to God. Until you reach the state in which doubts are impossible, they are bound to come. So I've talked about this many, many times, that the revelation of your real self has a quality of imperviousness to it. That, you know, people often ask me, how can I recognize a real spiritual experience or a real deepening of my understanding? How do I know it's not just fantasy? And how I've always known is because it has this quality of imperviousness. It doesn't matter how much you doubt it. It doesn't matter what you do about it. It's just not going away, right? You always have this feeling you can sort of throw things at it and they just kind of bounce off. When problems arise, they also call for a solution. In the course of one's practice, doubt will awaken. So she says, in the course of your practice, doubts will awaken. It's not just that you start with doubts and then they sort of get less and less, but more doubts get awoken as you're practicing, right? As you begin to get more understanding and have more kinds of experiences, what happens is your old way of being in the world starts to fall away, and then you're just filled with doubt. I went through a period where just having been a person who was both naturally and unnaturally confident, when I say unnaturally confident, I mean I projected a lot of confidence that wasn't real. And you know, part of my process was letting go of that unnatural confidence and having to experience uncertainty. And, you know, went through a long period of that. And that was new to me, and as the result of practice. And then Ma says something very much like what Abhinavagupta says at the beginning of his rendition of the Bhagavad Gita. She says, for those who have not started learning yet, and those who have completed their course successfully, there are no disturbing doubts and questions. So she's saying, if you're in a state of ignorance and you haven't even gotten started yet, you're not disturbed and you have no doubts. And if you've completed your course of learning, then you also have no doubts, right? But everything in the middle is full of doubts. This is exactly what Abhinavagupta says. When queries arise and doubts divide your mind, put them before your guru again and again. Whatever your guru says, accept and follow without asking why or how. Now, in our culture, again, we're trained to project confidence. When I was busy projecting confidence, that's just what I had been taught to do, and it's very, very successful. You know, people buy it, and they pay you money to be that confident, I found out. So there's a reluctance, I think, among Americans when you have a spiritual teacher to show that you have doubts. You think that, you know, if you express a doubt about the teachings or the teacher or yourself or something, that the whole situation is just going to crumble. It has to be something you can project 100% confidence on. Otherwise, there's something wrong with it, right? This isn't true at all. So Ma says, put those doubts before your guru again and again. At the same time, proceed also with your spiritual practices. Just as you eat, drink, sleep, and discharge your professional duties regularly, so must you pray to God with the same regularity to make you free from doubts. By sustained effort, fire will be lit, and its heat felt as well. Once the fire of real knowledge is kindled, everything will be burnt to ashes. Once you have the transmission of your real self through your sadhana, through the sustained practice, once you begin to really understand reality and nature, then all doubts will be gone. That understanding will not be subject to doubt. You will not be able to doubt it. Now, sometimes people also ask me, well, how do you know the difference between that and, you know, just being a dogmatic jerk? And the fact of the matter is that when we are in a state of ignorance, but we're absolutely certain that whatever our ignorance is reality, there is compulsion. There's a compulsion to prove it to other people. There's a compulsion to get other people to agree with you. There's a compulsion to have other people around you who think the same way. There's a kind of chugging engine of anxiety and compulsion and dogmatism and fanaticism about any situation in which we're projecting a limited view as absolute reality. But when you encounter absolute reality in your practice, you have no need to proselytize. It would be laughable. You have no need to try to convince anybody. You don't need anyone to be there with you having the same point of view, because everybody is that point of view. Everybody is that reality. There isn't anybody to convince. So I'm going to stop there. Jayakula is a nonprofit community offering opportunities to learn and practice in the direct realization traditions of Trika Shaivism and Dzogchen. We are based in Portland, Maine and Portland, Oregon. Visit jayakula.org to explore more of our offerings.